Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Alyssa Mastromonaco calls in to talk about why unwanted Ivanka keeps popping up everywhere. Then journalist Brooke Thomas joins me in studio along with Tian Tran and Grace Parra to discuss fitting in, standing out, and learning to embrace yourself. And as always, our hills. Before we get started this week, a little bit of housekeeping. If you want to submit a hill that you'll die on, you can record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it to our email address, hysteria@crooked.com. You can also send other correspondence there. Caroline and I both check it, though, so love notes and hate mail to our individual addresses, please. Second item on the housekeeping agenda, we are going to bring back the old feature, Dude, You Asked, for a weekly bonus video content, so you get to see us podcast with our faces. Please send us any and all of your questions, whether it be about the 2020 race, Ivanka shenanigans, or our weekly skincare routine, although that's pretty boring. I just put lotion on my face. Send your listener questions to hysteria@crooked.com, or if you want, you can tweet at me. I'm probably going to put out a call on Twitter as well. Hysteria merch is out. Finally, you guys have all been waiting a very long time, and you guys are all very excited about the muscle tank. It is the top selling item this week in the Crooked store. So you can keep up on Hysteria merch at the merch store by going to store.crooked.com. There's more stuff available, and there will be new items also like throughout the year. I'll keep you updated on that. More housekeeping. I'm going to be on tour with Pod Save America. I'm going to be in Denver on July 17th at the Belco Theater and in Salt Lake City on July 18th at the Eccles Theater. And I've never been to Utah before, so I'm pretty excited that I'm going to get to tick off Utah on my list of states that I haven't visited. Excited to join you guys July 17th in Denver, July 18th in Salt Lake City. The shows will be co-hosted by me, so make sure to come and see us live. Get tickets at crooked.com/events. Finally, I'm trying a new thing where I give a shout out to a special group of listeners this week. I want to give a shout out to people who still have to work on holidays. I spent New Year's Day one year when I was in high school giving baths at a nursing home. Not for fun. I actually worked there. But it was not the greatest New Year's Day of my life. So I can't say I feel your exact pain to all of you people who currently have to work on the 4th of July and other holidays. But I have felt similar pain and I'm with you. Now let's get to the show. Hello?
Hello?
Alyssa?
That was weird.
That was super weird. It just picked up and there was nobody.
But yet here I am.
Yeah, here you are. Thank goodness. I had a whole hello line planned. I had like pre-written it. I was going to be like, oh, it's hashtag most wanted Alyssa. But then I was shocked.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know. I was shocked by the silence and now it just totally threw my whole day off. So
that's okay. We'll take it from here.
Okay. Good. Thank you for being understanding. Let's get into it. I want to talk about hashtag unwanted Ivanka, the photoshopping meme that I accidentally started on Sunday because I had writer's block. So here's how it started. Alyssa, you saw, I'm assuming.
Yes.
People
yes.
photoshopping Ivanka Trump into historical moments where she didn't belong and wasn't wanted and wouldn't be useful. That was something that I suggested people do in response to the conversation at the G20, where we can see Ivanka trying to interject into a conversation between actual world leaders who have diplomatic experience and Christine Lagarde, the head of the IMF, kind of casting very obvious aspersions with her face on Ivanka. What did you think before we really get into like the photo things and the meaning of it and what actually happened? What did you think about Ivanka at the G20?
I mean, it's fucking appalling. You know, I mean, like, if you look back, and I guess for me, I put everything in the context of like when I was there mm-hmm. or just generally before Donald Trump was president. I mean, any of the administrations apply. Mm-hmm. I mean, she put herself, my favorite part, aside from the Christine Lagarde side eye, mm-hmm. which was righteous, was when, so at every summit, every G20, G8, NATO, et cetera, there's always what they call the family photo, which is the photo of all the leaders standing up straight, you know, in front of whatever logo it is that they're, you know, meeting for. And Ivanka joined the photo and she's not the president. And she just took her place front and center. I mean, she wasn't even like in the wings, you know, like I was during tap recitals. She was like right in the middle. And I guess it's just like this appalling, you hope, you wonder, you think that at some point someone has some self-awareness, right? Mm-hmm. Like that she knows she's not fit for the job she has, that she's totally unqualified, that she has the job because of her dad, which is the same way she got her like failing accessories line, you know, because her dad. And that she would have the self-awareness to be like, you know what? I came to the summit, but I'm at least going to step to the side. Mm-hmm. But there is actually no benefit of the doubt that can ever be given to her now, because she legitimately, per this trip and her actions, believes she belongs there.
Right. And some of the response to it, I think the reason that the meme kind of took off and it sort of took on a mind of its own. I believe that it took off because a lot of people had this low thrumming thought in the back of their mind, like, what the fuck is she doing there? Why is she there? She's never once run for any elected office. She hasn't been confirmed by the Senate for her job. She shouldn't even have her security clearance, to be honest. Mm-hmm. She has no diplomatic experience. So people were frustrated for real reasons that Ivanka, you know, was there. Like there are legitimate reasons. But one of the things that happens, as it tends to happen online with the memes, is that the longer the more it trended, the more I saw people attacking Ivanka's presence there for like bullshit reasons, you know, right. We're like, and I'm never going to defend, I'm not defending Ivanka. I'm trying to defend our argument against Ivanka. And by doing sexist shit and saying misogynist or violent things about her, we undermine the entire valid argument that we have.
Absolutely.
So I was noticing that there were some people photoshopping her. I mean, look, I don't think that it is impossible for a woman to care about the way that she looks and to be compliant with patriarchal standards of beauty, because that's how you get into meetings, and also be somebody who's worth being taken seriously. I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. And I think when people attack Ivanka for being pretty or fashionable, that is sort of what they're doing.
Yes. She still gets to dress how she wants to fucking dress. And like, of all the things I'm going to criticize her for, that's not going to be it.
Uh-huh. She should have been a little bit more respectful of the occasion, I think. And it's not even just about the way that she dresses. It's the way that she was trying to insert herself in conversations in front of the photo and everything. And I'm glad that the meme took off, and I hope that every time she's in a story from now on, people use the hashtag unwanted Ivanka, because she has never, ever been an elected official in the U.S. And hopefully she never will be.
Hopefully. I mean, but that is the thing. You know, there are all those rumors that she thinks she's going to be the first female president. And you're like, she can't really think that. And then you see her performance at the G20 and you're like, oh my God, she really does think that. Like,
right.
She does think that being rich, which is another thing, right? That being rich, if they really are, is the qualification for access and status and to be and to participate in things like this, right? It's not that you actually give a shit about what's happening in the world or have like an advanced degree that that makes you understand what's going on in the world. It's just like they're rich. Mm-hmm. So of course she can do it because she's rich.
Right. And she's pretty and she's rich. And she, what was interesting to me about the Ivanka at the G20 moment was her kind of Planet Ivanka general demeanor, where she's just completely divorced from reality. All of this was happening at the same time that we have a full-on crisis at the border, where children are still being kept in cages, where people are living in inhumane, unsafe, unsanitary conditions. And that's her father's administration's doing. And
right.
she has the gall to stand there smiling and pretend like she's some sort of advocate for women or for any people at all, which just, it just drives me nuts. One more question though, Alyssa. Mm. One of the critiques I got from people who had a lot of misspellings in their bios was that that people who are using the unwanted Ivanka hashtag must be jealous of her. What do you say to people who accuse critics of Ivanka of being jealous?
Okay, so I'm a critic. So if someone wanted to call me jealous, I would just say that I'm not jealous, that I think that people are critical of her because of the hubris and the exactly like what I was just saying, that she just, that all of these people for so long who have worked in the government had some sort of special qualification, mm-hmm. right? And it's just that she is tiptoeing through fields of landmines with no qualifications whatsoever. And with also, like, there are ways, I guess, that she could have demonstrated some sort of like curiosity towards learning more, but mostly everything she does is a show, mm-hmm. right? Like, you never hear stories about how like Ivanka went into some bad neighborhoods and tried to understand maybe why Michelle Obama was concerned about food deserts. You know, mm-hmm. she just says and does things, and she's just, there's no there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why people are critical of her, not right. because they're jealous of her long blonde hair.
Right. And here's another thought. As you were talking just now, I thought here's the best case scenario is that she's not really actually involved in the diplomatic negotiations that are going on. She was just there for the photo op. She wasn't actually right. in there trying to use her lack of skill to work on something that she doesn't really care about the outcome of because she's rich and she's always going to, you know, quote unquote rich, and she's always going to be rich. I think that she just might have been there for the picture, because in the world of the Trumps, to appear to be something is to be something. The appearance of success is success, and it's all artifice, and she's just like
but
her father.
The thing is, it's like, girl, then just stop with the photo. Like, take your G20 photo, stand next to your dad, flip your hair, do what you're going to do. But don't, like, go try to, like, convo bomb, you know, President Macron and Christine Lagarde. It's like, know when to say when, I guess is my point.
That is
even if that is your deal.
That is a really good point, Alyssa. Well, we have to wrap up the Ivanka conversation, but I wanted to debut a brand new news feature. We're calling it Toast or Roast. And
so excited.
This is the part of the news where Alyssa and I pick a story that we didn't spend most of the news talking about, that we want to either praise or that we want to roast. So for the inaugural Toast or Roast, Alyssa, are you offering a toast or a roast this week? And who are you offering it to?
I am offering a roast.
Ooh.
Of Eric Swalwell.
Oh, this was out of left field, Alyssa. Go on.
I had to, because you know what? I was thinking about, like, obviously the debates have been a nonstop source of conversation for the last week, right? And I kept thinking about, you know, the people who fell into the background, who blended in, who were wallflowers, the people who were far too aggressive. Like, that's just low-hanging fruit, right? Mm-hmm. My roast was like, in the same way that I would criticize, like, why is Ivanka at some of these events, right? Of the 20 some people running for president, like, what qualifies some of them to be up there and think that they have the experience to lead a country, other than the fact they are smarter than Donald Trump, which, Aaron, means you and I could also be at the debate. Okay, let's just be honest about that.
That would be fun.
We would bring so much flair and so much sauce. It would be so good.
It would be very fun.
Eric Swalwell's only contribution was to have some sort of form of, like, uncontrollable tick where he shouted next generation and pass the torch and came up with, like, fairly convoluted ways to work them into sentences. Like, I was watching him and I was like, oh my God, is this a Seinfeld episode? Like, is he Larry David at the corner? And then I was like, no, because Bernie Sanders is Larry David. So he, to me, was just like, he was the one person. I mean, you know, Marianne Williamson, like, another great, you know, social media moment that ensued after she was at the debate, which were all the fantastical moments that she truly appeared in history, like almost like Forrest Gump, like marrying Elizabeth Taylor at Neverland with Michael Jackson and Jose Ibert present. Like, that was pretty magical.
Yeah.
But no, mine is just a roast of Eric Swalwell. He needs to come up with a better reason to be on that stage. I mean, right. He is clinging to the 1% that's keeping him there. And it's like, if you're just doing this for a cabinet position, there are better ways.
Yep. I accept that roast. Okay. I have a toast to offer, a very short toast. I'm going to offer a toast to Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan.
Oh, do it.
Who last week, a lot of Supreme Court decisions came down because it was the final week in June. And Elena Kagan was assigned writing some important dissenting opinions, especially on the gerrymandering case. Kagan wrote mm-hmm. the dissent on that. And it was a fiery dissent in the tradition of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And she seems now to be the loud liberal voice on the court that we all saw in Ruth Bader Ginsburg and then we see in Justice Sotomayor. And it's exciting. It's one little exciting glimmer in a dark world of the Supreme Court is Elena Kagan kind of coming into her own and being more of a vocal, progressive voice.
Do you want to know a fun fact about Elena Kagan?
Absolutely.
She married me.
What? Yes. Oh my God.
Yes. David and I did not have a wedding. We were lucky and Elena Kagan offered to marry us and she had like decorations in her office for us. And I think there was an orchid and they had champagne and it was the nicest thing anyone could have done for me. And so I love her for a very special reason.
Oh, that's so sweet. And you are a wedding doula. Jesus.
I know, girl. Oh, I can come up with any idea for any occasion. I'm a machine.
You truly are a machine. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you so much for calling this week. And I can't wait to talk to you next.
All right. Talk to you next.
Bye.
Bye.
Stick around. There'll be more hysteria after the break.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Game day starts before kickoff. Get ready for the big game with help from Menards. Find great deals on sofas and recliners to keep guests comfortable all game long. Score big savings and stock up on game day goodies. Shop a variety of snacks and drinks to keep your party fueled up. Make Menards a part of your game plan. Shop in-store or on Menards.com and save big money.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, welcome back. We're at Personal Political, which is the part of the show where we talk about things that are on our minds and in the news and in our lives and at this table. First, I want to bring in the amazing women who I have with me today. First off, actor, comedian, writer, Tien Tran.
Hello.
Yeah.
Tien, it's like your Christmas.
It is my Christmas. The Women's World Cup is my Christmas, and for it to come like right around Pride. It's just like the best ever. It's my favorite time of the year.
Yeah, Tien and I watched the game yesterday together at a bar that was just packed full of fans.
Which bar?
Village Idiot.
Village Idiot.
It's a great one to watch games,
But it was packed and it was so fun.
It was so fun. I was going to wear my jersey today, but then I was like, I actually only wear that on game days. I don't want to ruin the superstition of like wearing them off game. I have like jawline acne from holding my face intensely. I woke up this morning. I was like, oh, there's a line of zits. Because
from
face holding during the game.
It was a tense game. Next up, I want to bring in actor, comedian, activist, Grace Parra.
Hello. Yay! I'm applauding myself.
Yay!
Yay!
Yay, Grace!
I love World Cup as well. This is very exciting. I don't know if you guys know this, my eldest brother, Alex, actually runs a kids' soccer league in Texas. And he was featured on the local news in Houston yesterday. He and his eldest son, Grant, who's also a player, because they've had this like surge in kids who want to play soccer because, of course, it's like World Cup time. So there's just like hundreds of kids in Houston that are signing up for his league, and he's so excited. And Grant, who's my nephew, was asked on camera, so what do you think is going to happen with the game yesterday? And he was like, I think it's going to be 2-1. U.S. is going to win. It's going to be very close. He's a little Nostradamus.
Did he say it in a spooky way?
He's kind of a spooky kid.
We love spooky kids here.
But yeah, Para family gets way into this. It's very exciting.
It's so fun. Yes. Well, finally, I want to bring in, for the first time on Hysteria, Young Turks journalist Brooke Thomas.
Yay! I didn't have to applaud myself.
We're all clapping. Today's like, why are we clapping?
I don't know. I love it.
Because everybody's off tomorrow.
Exactly. So like,
that's true.
Not to celebrate.
Are you doing anything over the holiday?
No, I don't have any plans. I'm going to crash somebody's barbecue.
Okay.
But yeah. I haven't figured it out yet.
Is it going to be somebody you know or a stranger? Okay.
Didn't matter.
Okay. I can get done.
Just follow the smell of meat and then
just walk in and be like, hi, and pretend to know
people. Exactly the plan.
Have you been watching the World Cup?
I have not.
Oh, it's well. The championship is on.
I was working yesterday. Was working yesterday while it was going on, and there was a crowd over by the TV in the office. So I was following along with their cheers.
Yeah.
And then I checked Twitter right after, and I saw the tea sipping moment.
Uh-huh. Oh, so great!
And that was pretty great. Yeah,
love that.
One thing that I think is like exciting about like the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, big positive sporting events like this is that I was just. Kind of, I mentioned this over email. I think it kind of models the women's national team, kind of models this new like inclusivity and like celebration of women and different types of women and all of them working together on one thing. And it reminded me of Tien, the topic that we're talking about today. You brought up something really interesting about inclusivity, belonging, not belonging, and heteronormativity.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear you talk a little bit more about that.
Because from a very young age, you're just taught from media and from parents and siblings that there's a very specific way that you're supposed to be in life. And for me, that was like being straight was the ultimate goal for the longest time. And I was telling you this yesterday that for the longest time, I thought that I was going to have to marry my cousin because he was the only Vietnamese boy that I knew. And in my brain, as like a kid, I was putting together heteronormativity.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like, I only saw Vietnamese opposite gendered coupling. And in my brain, I was like, it's got to be my cousin, right? That's the only possibility. But I really tried to be straight for a very long time and stayed in the closet until I was in college because I really thought that it was so wrong to be out.
Yeah.
And that I just hadn't met the right guy or like did all those things where I was trying to explain away my feelings and like attraction towards women because I had never seen that in front of me or seen it in the media or seen it from like people that I knew. So I really for a very long time tried to like meet those heteronormative goals, like all throughout college, tried to date men, wore high heels and high waisted skirts for like, it just, I know that's like very essentializing, but just like presentationally, I tried so hard to like fit a very high femme ideal of what women are supposed to act and look like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do other women that you know in the gay community have similar experiences?
Yeah. Like all of my dear friends and my partner, we talk about it all the time about like how we tried for very long, like big chunks of our lives to be straight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was about fitting in. And were you, when you did come out as gay, did you experience alienation from people that you expected to to dislike you or reject you?
No. And that was the thing. Like, I was so afraid. All of my closest friends in college, and I think this is when I was really trying to find myself, they were all straight. And like, we were all very, there's like the party scene and the hookup scene when you're in college. And so much of our conversations were based around like, what guy did you go home with? Or like, who were you, who's the hot guy? And I remember being so afraid to come out to all these women. And when I did, they were like, oh, great. One time I remember coming home and I was kind of like crying and my dear friend was like, oh my God, are you okay? Did you have too much wine? And I just turned to her. I was like, no, I didn't have too much wine. I'm gay. And so now that is our like inside joke of like, did you have too much wine?
I think that's like a really interesting point that as a straight woman, that's not something I've ever had to pretend to fit in. But I think everybody here has had something that they've been like, I'm trying to pass into a world that I don't feel like I belong in, and I'm going to pretend to fit in. Brooke, have you had anything in your life that you've like tried to pass into something that?
Yeah, I think I wanted to be white until I was like 12, or at least like a lighter skinned black woman, which is weird because I don't ever remember having like these moments where it's like, I want to be a white person. Like, I don't ever remember like wishing into the mirror as a child, you know, but I don't think that I knew how cool it was to be a little black girl. Mm-hmm. Like I know now, and like kind of like what I learned and experienced in college. I grew up in Muskogee, Oklahoma, which is a really white country town in Oklahoma.
Is that near Jinx?
Yes. So okay. Jinx is like near Tulsa. We're kind of like a suburb of Tulsa.
Yes. I lived there for 2 years.
Jinx,
I was
Oklahoma.
Born in Pampa, Texas, and then I lived there for 2 years. Yeah, my dad is retired now, but he was an engineer.
My sweet mate in college, her name was... Not her name. She was from Pampa.
No way.
Texas. Yeah, that's
okay. We're going to have to offline about this. Pampa has 45 people.
We're
going to
have a spinoff Hysteria podcast featuring you two discovering that you're actually
cousins.
Right.
Exactly. You don't have to get married.
But yeah, I think, it's so weird. I had really like my grandmother is really, really light skinned. All my siblings, my mom. And I grew up around people who I think they made an extra effort to be like, no, oh, your skin is so beautiful. And always like telling me since I was a child that I'm so beautiful. But that wasn't enough, I think, to push back on society and kind of just like what I was around. All my friends were these white girls. And so I wanted to be really skinny. I remember like I wanted to be like shaped like Paris Hilton. Mm-hmm. I remember like not having like being curvy and not in my way, you know, like from like fourth grade. I don't ever remember wearing like an A cup or a B cup bra. I don't ever remember that. I'm like, did that happen? Was there like a slow progression for most women? I don't remember that. I remember going from undershirts to like a double D or something, like wearing the wrong size for. But I remember like wanting to be shaped like simpler and wanting different hair and just it would be easier to deal with and like certain things people would say and just wanting to, you know, live in a certain part of town. Just so many different things that's so weird now, I think. Mm-hmm. But
well,
and I grew
changed?
Out of that. You know what? I don't know what, I think maybe just like slightly growing out of it in high school. But I remember like being like, it being like so self-affirming, like going to college. And I did go to a PW. I went to a predominantly white institution. But there were so many black women there who were beautiful and who just were seen as, it was normal. It was normalized. I wasn't one of two anymore. Yeah. And that was cool for me. And it changed. And my group of friends changed all of a sudden. Instead of having, you know, a group of 10 girls and 9 of them were white. And then me, there 9 of them were black. And it was just a different experience. And I'm so different as an adult. Everybody's different as an adult than they are as a child, but I think I'm so different in that way than I was as a child, which is so weird because I had a family around me who were constantly pushing I had to grow out of. I don't know.
Sometimes
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, sometimes it takes a minute for what people are telling you to actually sink in.
Yeah.
Because especially if, like, when you're a kid, the most important thing to you is, like, what's going on at school. Because you know your family, I mean, if you have a good family, you know your family's going to love you. It's like a zero effort sitch. You can be a total piece of shit and your family's still going to love you. Mm-hmm. But at school, like, they don't have to love you. And so to earn their love or to feel like you fit in is a huge deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking as you were talking, Brooke, about you were saying like now you think you realize that being a black girl is really cool. Do you think there have been cultural changes around representation of black women that have made it easier for little black girls who are growing up now?
I think so. You see it more. It's still not enough. Like, especially in my business, I spent 9 years. Now I'm kind of branching out doing all kinds of stuff. But in local news, like 8 years solid in local news, which is a very, you know, they talk about being non-biased, which nobody is non-biased. What it means is like shrink your personal perspective down to what it would be if you were a rich white man. And that is how you need to tell stories on the news. You know what I mean? Who's also a Christian and who's, you know what I mean? Who's also straight, like, and who's also slim. Like, that is how you need to tell stories in the news. And they call it being non-biased. It's crazy. But I think it's gotten better. I don't remember, other than Oprah, I don't remember seeing many like dark skinned women, on TV and in TV, still in the business that I'm in, I feel like it's still struggling. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I always say that is my favorite part about this job. Like, there are little 6, 7, 8, 9 year old black girls who are just as brown as me, just as dark skinned as me, and who can look on the TV and think, oh, she's pretty. Oh, she's smart. Oh, I like this. Or, mm-hmm. oh, I can wear my hair like that. Or that lipstick color looks good on me. Like, I can wear red lipstick. I can wear, you know what I mean? Things like that. Things that you are told, like, I can't even find a Band-Aid that matches. You know what I mean? Until, like, a couple weeks ago, I found some at Target. But, you know, I don't know. So it's gotten better. It's not good, but I absolutely think it's gotten better. I think that the change in me has just been, now it's something that I want to fight for. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, how we tell stories, how that's something I don't, because I still wasn't even there as far as professionally when I started in the TV business. It was like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be. This is what I'm supposed to sound like. This is what I'm supposed to talk about. This is what's supposed to be normal. And that deletes a lot of, like, culturally black things. Mm-hmm. And now I refuse to be like that, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah, totally. Grace, what was your big thing that you tried to pass into?
Well, I am Mexican-American, but for a long time, because the word Mexican was, like, kind of considered gross, or at mm-hmm. least in my eyes it did, I tried to pass myself off as Italian until I was, like, 8. And, yeah, and I've talked about this on Hysteria before, but people, you know, kids would be like, para, what's that mean? Like, what are you? Because, mm-hmm. you know, I present as something, but people mm-hmm. don't necessarily know what. Mm-hmm. And so it's not something that I can hide, you know, nor would I want to, but as a kid, you do want to. Because, again, yeah. like Tian and Brooke have mentioned, you do want to pass as, like, this ideal of a, you know, pretty little blonde white girl, which I was not. So, yeah, I passed it as Italian. I'd just be like, you know, it's Italian. We eat lots of spaghetti. And it's
you're
cool.
like, Mamma mia.
Mamma mia, I'm Italian.
Oh, my goodness.
But one thing that struck me about this conversation that and to answer your question, Aaron, that really was the point at which I was like, I need to conform. It all had to do with language, because in my house, my parents both spoke Spanish, mm-hmm. but I so desperately did not want to. And I so desperately did not want to have an accent. And I so desperately did not care. I didn't want to know anything about Spanish. It took me a long time to warm up to the idea of embracing bilingualism. And so to me, in listening to both of you guys talk about vestiges of what you're still kind of getting over and elements of, like, what you're so proud to retain, to me, it's language. It's like, I feel like I would be so much better at speaking Spanish if those first few years I had just embraced what it meant to be Mexican American and mm-hmm. to understand that, like, bilingualism is awesome. So I feel like I had to catch up a lot. Like, I had to, you know, learn a lot of Spanish in college, which is a weird way to learn it. You know, studying abroad really helped with that, which is, like, the whitest white girl thing to say. I learned Spanish by studying abroad. I had the advantage of having a family who speaks it, so I can practice constantly, and I'm very grateful for that. But it's still something that, like, my three elder brothers, who were all born and raised in Mexico, they know Spanish way better than I do. And it's because they just have that advantage of having grown up in a place that embraces Mexicans versus in the United States, where that's not necessarily the case. And where so many people, if you can try to not be, if you can pass as not Mexican, it's considered a plus. Mm-hmm. So working against that has been tough. And, you know, I say that as somebody now who, like, we all see the news. We know what it's like to, mm-hmm. you know, to see the biases that still persist against, increasingly so, against the Latinx community. And so it's tough. So you know, listening to, like, you ladies talk about what we would pass on to younger kids, it's like, if we can tell kids that their identities from a young age really matter, and that if we can present as people on that have platforms to be able to, you know, say, like, oh, she can have big curly hair and that's awesome. And, like, for me, it was J-Lo as Selena, where I was finally like, oh, okay, cool. Oh, I can be a Latina. That's kind of sexy. Yeah. Yeah. But up until that point, there was nothing. There wasn't even an Dora the Explorer when I was growing up.
Yeah,
was just, there was
so
nobody.
Yeah.
And proportionately, like, I even grew up in Texas, where there are a lot of Latin Americans, and it still felt like those communities were living in shadows. And that's not even, like, a, you know, documented versus undocumented observation. It's just generally mm-hmm. Hispanics felt like we were living in shadows. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also think, like, you know, we've talked about this on the pod too, but even the way that we refer to Hispanics, like, that there's, like, a kind of a tone in the way that the word Mexican is used that is difficult. You want to shy away from it because it just doesn't feel like it's embraced. Mm-hmm. But that is changing. I mm-hmm. do think it's changing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I say something about what
absolutely.
You said about speaking Spanish? Just because I noticed that just growing up in Texas, Oklahoma,
yeah.
it's all, like, Mexico and Native American.
Yeah.
Then there's, like, some black people, but, like... You know, but you know, and I think I did notice that, and I thought about this. Me and a couple of friends were having this conversation when it was such a big deal that Pete Buttigieg can speak Norwegian or something. And I think about, like, what if little Mexican kids were embraced like that? Like, when I was a kid, it's so weird. They put them in almost like these remedial classes, like saying, like, you know, yes, to try and teach you English. And really, it should be like, okay, actually, it's really hard to learn Spanish. You're smarter than everyone else here. You're going to learn English. It's just going to be all around you, but you're going to know two languages. Let's embrace it. This is really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Help
yeah.
the rest of the kids out. Like, yeah. teach us some, you know. And instead, it's like, no. Put them, you know, they're going to go for a couple hours in the back and work on their English. And that's so bizarre that then this grown man reads a Norwegian book and
people lose their shit.
And it's like,
fantastic and so multicultural.
Yeah. yep.
Yeah. He's the like the white rainbow of multicultural.
But like, I think we embrace kids like that. You
yeah.
know?
I think that's right. And the way that people prioritize multiculturalism that involves like European culturalism versus like other nationalities. And I think just listening to all three of your stories, I was thinking about how there's a sort of pattern to every single one of them where it's like I reject who I am and then I learn that I like it and then I spend the rest of my life being like, fuck yeah, this is who I am.
Yes. Yeah.
And for me, it was like, you know, being a kid, I grew up in rural Wisconsin and then I went to Notre Dame for college. And it was the first time I really realized how many rich people there were and like what rich people were. I had no concept really of how rich some people were. Like their parents could pay $50,000 a year to send their kid to college. Like, and so I spent a lot of time when I was in college trying to, and this isn't the same as altering like sexuality or race or language, but I think a lot of people, I tried to move within class and to pass as like I wanted to fit in with the people who are like from the boring cul-de-sac suburbs. And I wanted to be somebody who passed as like a rich prep school girl who'd been to a country club. I'd never been to a country club. And as I got older and as I got out of college, I remember one day being like, why do I have so many polo shirts? Like, why am I trying to do this? I think that our uniqueness, whether it be the place that we came from, our sexuality, our background, our ethnicity, our language, all of those things, I think, are assets to us. And so now I almost feel myself like overemphasizing the fact that like, yeah, we grew up with like not a ton of money and I grew up in the country. And I, one time my mom was like in the kitchen, she goes, oh my God, don't go outside. And I looked outside and there was a bull standing on our well. Like that sort of shit. Like I that's an asset. Cause those things like Tien, you being somebody who is an out woman who is living in LA and doing what you're doing. Like that's awesome. Like all of us are doing things that are awesome. And like, so I think the moment at which we all decided like standing out was a good thing is like a really important moment in every woman's life.
Well, it's interesting because we are basically fed two very opposite messages from a young age. One is like, you're the only one of you. You're amazing. Like lean into who you are. You're such an individual. Like that's amazing and special and great. And then also at the same time, it's like, you want to conform. You want to be with the group. You know, you hear things like no new friends, gang. Like it's just me and my crew. Like you feel like you have to be part of something at the same time that you're being told you need to be yourself. And those two things are essentially at odds with each other. It's difficult to be like, I want to be a total individual, but then you go down a path of like loneliness. And I feel like ultimately we're all just trying to combat that feeling of loneliness. So of course we do whatever it takes to fit in with whoever is around us. And I don't know that ever goes away, but I do think you're right that at some point we understand that the unique parts of us, the unique characteristics that we bring to the table supersede whatever it takes for us to conform. And at some point it's just like natural for us to be like, I can't fake this anymore. I can't, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Tien, I feel like you've especially experienced
that. Well, the embracing of uniqueness and like the things that make us ourselves have also, for me personally, have like opened doors to new communities that I feel empower that even more. And like to come back to what you were saying, I also wanted to, I never ever explicitly said like I wanted to be white,
right.
but I like felt that so much.
You realize you're doing little things that mean that.
That mean that. Mm-hmm. And I remember like when I first started doing comedy that I would like proudly be like, I don't want to be seen as the Asian comedian. Like I don't want people to see me as that. I want them to see me as like any other comedian, which is like an erasure of like my own identity
right.
and like an erasure of like what makes me unique and also something that I can't like visually can't take away.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And to be able to like embrace that is so exciting. And also it really does. It's like it opens up to like new communities. And I'm meeting more like other Asian and queer Asian folks. And it's really fun to like be a part of a community that we have this like shared identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Here's another thing, though, that I was just thinking about, Grace, as you were talking about like standing up versus fitting in. We also have this message that it's like really not cool to be basic, which is like it's like it's great to fit in, but it's also the worst to fit in.
Yeah.
So what to you? I just was thinking about like the concept of basic. Like, what does it mean? And why do you think people are being chastised for being basic? What do you think basic is?
I'm glad the word basic didn't really exist when we were kids, because I think like, yeah, basic is basically what we were all trying to be.
Uh-huh.
Just like the most, you know, I always think of like, I always reference Kelly Kapowski in Saved by the Bell as like my ideal. I tried to model my voice after her because she was the perfect
woman. You did
woman.
It, Grace. Success. I really? You sound did. Just like
yeah, when I close my eyes, I can see her in this room.
Kelly, where are you?
I don't remember what Kelly sounded.
I don't either.
Not
don't
Grace. Even. The answer is not Grace.
Kelly talk. I don't even know.
I remember like her hairstyle more than
I do. I remember voice. Everything yeah. about I remember everyone being obsessed with her, but I don't remember her.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen, right?
Yeah.
Are we doing a sexism right now? Did we just sexism Kelly Kapowski by not remembering?
Uh-oh. We did a sexism.
Anyway, so you were trying to sound like Kelly.
I was trying to sound like Kelly because, yeah, I didn't want to sound like my, you know, family that had accents and shit. And, like, I just didn't want to. And I also wanted to sound, like, very educated, too, mm-hmm. because I felt like then I would supersede the stereotypes of what it meant to be a Mexican. So I was, like, super articulate and made sure that, like, I was just super annoying. But I do also remember when Clueless came out and when everybody started saying like, which maybe had been happening before, but that was like a watershed moment for me where I was like, oh, pretty white girls say like. So I'm going to start to incorporate that into my language. And I did. It was not natural. It was not natural at all, but I did it because it felt like, yeah, that's something that's going to make me. So anyway, so those are probably two very kind of basic bitch characters that I definitely modeled myself after.
Is Kelly basic, though?
I don't know. I mean, I
feel like Kelly Kapowski wouldn't wear Uggs.
She wouldn't wear Uggs,
which
you're right.
To me is like a characteristic
you're
of
right.
that.
You're right.
I think you're good there.
I remember when I was a kid, everybody had Umbro shorts. Remember Umbro? Yes.
With a North Face pullover and Uggs. I feel like that's it.
I was pre Uggs, but we had like Umbro shorts and like Adidas shower slides was the cool thing for people to wear. And like you wanted to have like the right, there was like a sweet spot in the world of basic versus individual. You wanted to have like the cool color of Umbro shorts, but not so cool that it was a weird color. Or like you wanted to have a starter jacket.
Oh my God.
Not so weird that like you're the only one with that starter jacket.
Right.
You don't want to have a Charlotte Hornets one because everybody has Charlotte Hornets. But you also don't want to have like a weird, like, I don't know, Boise State one or whatever.
Right.
It was just, I think like kids especially have to deal with like these two conflicting things where it's like fit in, be unique.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Be both of those things at once. Otherwise, you're going to be punished. I was just also thinking earlier in the show, I talked to Alyssa about Ivanka at the G20 mm-hmm. and about her standing out at the G20. And I was just thinking about professional fitting in and like how much we have to change who we are to fit in professionally. Do any of you recall having to like change the way you dressed or change the way you acted?
Like yesterday? Or you mean like before that?
Brooke, you mentioned being in like local news. Did you ever remember having to like change the way you dressed or?
So many things. I think that, and even, you know, when I was in Philly was a really rough experience for me. And I just like got to the point where I feel comfortable being honest about how rough it was. Like my first couple of days at work, my co-anchor asked me if I had ever heard of the paper bag test. Because he's surprised God. They hired someone as dark as me. This is in Market 4.
Oh, my God.
So, right. This, and it was just like a couple years ago, you know? And then I remember just like we had this stylist who was awful and so mean. Like one time I like pushed back on something I didn't want to wear. I was like, oh, no, I think I like the way this fits better. And she was like, whoa, whoa, calm down, animal. And I hadn't even like raised my voice.
Oh my God.
And I remember being like, you know what? It's not really a cool thing to refer to Black people as animals. Oh no, there is a Mexican person in my family. I would never. I would never be. And it just, she was awful. And I remember, and she used to kind of change her voice when she talked to me, like, girl, you will look so good. Look at those hips, girl. And she would do that.
I'm like wincing from the soul.
Like, this is my life, right? And I remember saying something to my executive producer about it, and he was like, oh, she's like that with everybody. She's like that with everybody. Which, no, she's not. And okay. But, so anyway, but... So I think always like changing the way I dress because my body is shaped differently than like someone who may be just like slimmer and less curves than me. And so I wouldn't wear like V-neck dresses or mm-hmm. anything that showed any cleavage mm-hmm. or like try to have things that are not so tight because mm-hmm. someone will look at me and another woman in the same dress and say, I look unprofessional. I look like I'm going to the club. Mm-hmm. And it's weird because Philly, I was at the point where I was like embracing more like professionally, like who I am and what I want to talk about and what my responsibilities are, like with my platform and with what comes out of my mouth and things like that. And there's so many things. And I feel like back to what I was saying about perspective, there's so many things that affect marginalized communities that aren't normal. So on the news and it's like, don't give your opinion. Mm-hmm. But if there's some random reason that there is a story about a wedding and it's a man and a woman, you're allowed to say congratulations to the happy couple. You know, that's, I guess, okay. And then, but if it's a gay couple, you are not allowed to say that because that is you giving an opinion.
And, oh my God.
And so certain things that are facts. So I don't know. So I feel like you have to like delete that aspect of yourself or you're worried about that. Like yeah. I run a group on Facebook for Black women on TV just because in my first couple jobs, I was the only Black woman in the market on air, let alone, you know, and the consultant would so I'm like getting off topic here, mm-hmm. but so just so many things that you know you have to change. So changing the way you dress, changing the way you speak, changing what you talk about, changing like when somebody says something that's offensive, you are afraid to push back on that because mm-hmm. then it looks like the Black girl is angry and she's yeah. got an attitude. You are afraid to like speak up for yourself and say, hey, that's not cool. That's not okay. Because then it's like, oh, Brooke is sensitive or things like that. So yes. Mm-hmm. Just completely. Just yes.
This has been brought up, in the media. I think increasingly in the last couple of years. But as a writer, I've been the diversity writer in a number of comedy rooms, mm-hmm. and that is such a. It's such a. First of all, like it's very obvious who the diversity. This is changing now, where hopefully like writers' rooms are more diverse. So it's not like there's just the one token diverse person in the room. But in the writers' rooms that I was in when I first started writing, this is probably like 8-9 years ago, it was just me. And so there was this like unspoken, oh, you're only here because mm-hmm. the network is paying for this spot. And so like, you don't necessarily have to speak as much because trust us, like, you know, you're doing well. You should be lucky that you're here. Mm-hmm. That's what matters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you can chime in, great, but we don't have any expectations of you. And it's like, and that is such a rough way to introduce somebody into the world of comedy writing because it is supposed to be so democratic, you know, everybody weighing in when you have a fun yeah. joke and a fun moment, a fun character, whatever it may be, but you just feel like there's a scarlet letter on you as the diverse writer.
Yeah. The worst thing about working in a writer's room is like, and I've had only good experiences working in writer's yeah. rooms, but the worst thing about it is that the entire industry has convinced itself it's democratic and it's the least democratic.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. It is Absolutely. So undemocratic. Yeah. It's like up until a few years ago, it was like guys hiring their buds mm-hmm. and they were making good TV, them and their buds, but it was all just like dudes hiring dudes they already knew
yeah.
to work on the shows about dudes. Doing dude stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's like that was, I cannot believe anybody ever convinced themselves that that was like a democratic thing. But I want to go back really quickly, Brooke, to something you talked about. You touched on like our bodies mm-hmm, as something mm-hmm. that we feel like we need to change or disguise. And I think that that's a topic that has a lot to it for a lot of women. We are pressured to cover up, but not too much. Or wear tight clothes, but not so tight. Have any of you had an experience where you've been made to feel bad about a clothing choice you made that really had nothing to do with you and everything to do with the person making the critique?
In one writer's room that I was in a few years ago, there was another writer who thought it was funny to tell me, hey, what are you still doing dressed when I walked into the room?
What?
Wait. What do you mean?
And I, like, what are you still doing with your clothes on?
Oh.
And I, this was 6 years ago. This was not that long
ago. Thing to
say. And then because I got so nervous when that was thrown at me, I laughed. He thought it was then a bit. Mm-hmm. It became a room bit. So every time I walked into the room, he would say that for months. For months. And I don't know what I was wearing, but it was clearly something that was like a trigger for him, I guess.
No,
and
he's a creep.
He's a creep.
Yeah.
He's a creep.
No.
That's super creepy.
Yeah.
You probably had on a t-shirt and sweats. He probably was like a creep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I used to work at the Second City in Chicago, we had a notorious like costuming day where we would all try to figure out our outfits and a stylist would come in and like dress all of us. And at the time we were in this presentation of like business casual on mm-hmm. stage, because the idea was that if we looked nice on stage, then like we earned the respect of the audience and then we could like, you know, all of our jokes were earned. And I tried to be I have kind of like a very specific gender presentation when it comes to clothes that I like. Kind of femme stuff, but when it's too femme, it makes me feel like I'm not myself. And this woman just didn't get that and kept bringing super flowy, like boho-y chic shirts to me for like to wear on stage. And I like each of us had our like all of us had a different breakdown of like, this is just like the absolute worst. Like she couldn't in her mind envision me in anything that wasn't femme. Mm-hmm. And kept bringing me like flowy shirts, flowy pants, like a skirt. And I was like, no, I want like men's wear styled clothes. And she's like, I just don't get what that is. Yeah. And I'm like, ugh.
Well, and like clothing and presentation is so important to somebody whose gender isn't like or gender identity is not as like typical.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. somebody who is not like a cis hetero woman is like, I guess I don't really have to think about, like, if someone tries to, like, give me clothes that I'm like, I don't like this. It's not something that feels like an affront to my identity because I've never had to, like...
Right. It'll just be like, that's ugly, but it doesn't hurt my feelings.
Right, exactly. Right. But because I haven't had to... Yep. That's not, like, been a part of my, like, point. Self-expression.
Yeah, my sisters still don't get it sometimes when we have, like, very formal events as families. I haven't worn a dress in, like... 10 years maybe. Mm-hmm. And it like, it just blows their mind that like, I would not want to wear one that just doesn't like feel like, it just doesn't feel right on me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that should, at this point,
this is like,
oh my goodness. Yeah. I had to become comfortable with my own body. Like I wore a minimizer bra.
Mm-hmm.
All
really?
Through high school. Yeah. And it was like, I only had one. I wore that thing to death. I think at one point, like the underwire was coming out of it. And I had like taped it back in there. That is so weird. I used to hand wash it.
Wait, we're supposed to have more than one bra?
But now I'm like, I like the way I'm shaped. I like my body. I used to be so weird about like how big my lips are, or, like how big my breasts are. Like, and now I'm like, no, I like my body and I want to dress for what I think looks good. I still don't think that should invite comments, and not even sometimes women do it, and it's so bothersome. Mm-hmm. I'm totally fine. We have the most ridiculous conversations with my friends. So if I'm on the phone with like my friend and we're on FaceTime and she's like, oh, your boobs look great, I love that. I invite that. We are friends. Mm-hmm. But it's weird. Like there was a viewer the other day, I was just wearing like a crop top and a skirt, and she was like, oh, look at your chest. That's something I wish so bad that I inherited from my mom.
Ew.
I was like, I wish I could see my face right now. You can't. But like,
it's like not an insult,
so
but also
weird.
Like weird.
What? It's inappropriate.
It's
for you to focus
inappropriate.
On my breasts, you weirdo. And I think I wrote back, ugh, don't do that. And she assumed that I was saying, oh no, don't be down on yourself. And she was like, no, you know, just some people. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, don't point out my boobs. Let me just wear clothes. Like, you know, weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I think she meant well, but what are you doing?
It's weird, man.
I think
having body stuff pointed out by people that you're not on that level with is something that
weird.
Is just like instantly makes you feel like you don't belong in whatever room you're in.
Yeah.
Whoever, like if you're at work, if you're at home, if you're just like randomly walking down the street and some guy says something about your butt, it immediately just makes you feel like the world has stopped and you're the only one and you feel terrible and you don't want people to look mm-hmm. at you.
It's just, mm-hmm. It's weird. There
are
more appropriate things to focus on.
Yeah.
Than somebody's breast.
Yeah,
it's very invasive
danger.
And weird. Yes. Yeah.
I'm having just these like flashes right now. I feel like a PTSD,
like just all these moments in life where that's been called out. Like even from a very young age, just people, you know, just like creepy dudes checking you out. Uh-huh. I mean, it's relentless. And this is something that men truly don't quite grasp, what it's like to walk through life as a woman and have your body critiqued by everybody around you. You just
can't escape it. From the time girls start to develop, like I always felt bad. If I ever have a daughter, I will hope that she's lucky enough that she hits puberty after about three quarters of her friends are done with it. Because, like, the first ones to go through it always have a hard time because they're the
That's
ones.
That's me. I got a bra when I was 9, 10.
Yeah, oh my God. Me too. Like I said, don't remember anything between adult bra and undershirt. Like, I don't remember
the transition. I was in a similar situation where it was me and a bunch of white kids. So, like, very, really hard to deal. And also, like, I went to a private school and we had to wear white shirts. And for some reason, my mom bought me a bright pink bra. So, like, everybody noticed. And I look back and I'm like, Mom, what were you thinking? I think she just thought it was
cute. Which is how it should be. Like that. Like, when I would go to church with my grandma, like, I get it. I'm dressing for my grandmother and what she, and that's fine. It's my grandma. You know what I mean? But other than that, I want to wear what I want, where I want.
Yeah.
And that's it. I always say, like, if I have a little girl, I want her, if she wants to wear little short shorts, that's fine because they're baby legs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's nothing sexual about that. Yeah. We need to fix the people around her.
Right.
Yes. Their baby legs.
Right. Like, That's true. I mean,
it's a weird thing. Dress codes in high schools and middle schools for little girls are weird and overtly sexual.
Uh-huh. And I think that it's just... It like you said, those are a child's body. Yeah. And
there's nothing sexual about that.
No. Right. And it's not on the child to dress a certain way.
But those
like ideal, it's like just reinforcing heteronormativity of just like certain bodies being presented in certain ways. Mm-hmm. Are the expectations of like straight culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that a female body is inherently sexual to boys. Mm-hmm. And that if you present your female body, that boys will be distracted enough. You know what? If men are so great at running shit, then why can't they handle cleavage?
Yoga pants.
Yoga pants.
Shoulders.
Yeah, right. It's like, come on, guys. You can either be the people that are best fit to run almost every Fortune 500 company in world government, or you can be people who are driven batshit insane by the shape of a butt.
Yeah.
Right. You can't be both. You can't be both.
I think there's still a ban on sleeveless dresses for women in as part of the White House correspondence. I don't think you can sit in the press room with a sleeveless dress on.
Well,
I thought that was the White House general rule for women.
Which is absurd.
I don't know. We should ask
it's
Alyssa.
Shoulders.
A shoulder.
What?
Don't we think Michelle Obama, though, did like a lot, so much progress by, you know, presenting a woman who was confident in her body and who showed, like, she showed shoulder all the time. And I mean, we don't have that now, obviously, in the White House, but like, I do remember being like, yes, this is amazing. And she's a sexy woman, too. Yeah. Somebody who is not suppressing her sexuality by any means, but she's professional and she looks beautiful. And the wardrobe that she's presenting is also well thought out. And I like that too, because on the flip side, I think a lot of us feel so suppressed that we're just like, well, fuck it. I'll just wear like, you know, t-shirt and like leggings. I don't care, because we get scared about what the parameters are.
Yeah.
I think we need more of that in all industries, not just in politics, but I'm so glad that her visibility was as prominent as it was, because it really did showcase to women, like, show those shoulders, be professional and also be sexy. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I also was thinking back to like the clothes thing. I think I was the opposite of you guys. I was a late bloomer, and like until my senior year of high school, I was just like this tiny little thing. And it was, I felt kind of pressure on the other side where it's like all these other girls get to dress like sexy. And I want to be able to wear a sundress and have it like look cute and stuff and not just be a pancake. And it was like on the other side of it's because it's like now once you are a girl who is like starting to develop, then you have to dress like an adult woman.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And because we are going to look at you like an adult woman. And if you're the only one who doesn't look like an adult woman, then there's something like silly about that, which is like another alienating thing.
I was the same way, still waiting for them to come in. But I remember buying my first like water bra.
What?
Victoria's Secret.
Because I wanted so, because in my brain, I was like, the attention of boys is the ultimate goal. And like is the like where you'll find happiness and popularity and like social security and social like cachet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I bought a water bra. I remember going to Victoria's Secret, getting a water bra, getting a deep cut shirt from Wet Seal.
Okay.
Because it was like the first mixer in middle school. And I was like, you saw me during the day with a flat chest. Well, you're going to see me at this dance with big boobs.
How'd it go?
I mean, not great.
that's how Tian met her husband. Yeah,
and that was also her cousin.
It was also my cousin.
They thought they met at the family reunion.
Oh, okay. Well, ladies, we have to wrap this portion of the conversation up. This was so great. Brooke, thanks for dropping by. We're going to take a break. When we come back, The Hills Will Die On.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one. Download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And we're back. We've gotten to the part of the show where we take adamant stances about things that don't really matter. It's The Hills We'll Die On. Let's get started with our listener hill. Caroline, you want to fire it up?
Hi, Hysteria. This is a response to the listener who said wearing socks in bed is not an indicator of a serial killer. Respectfully, I disagree. Wearing socks in bed is disgusting. I know the world is tough out there. It's harsh, but grow up, man. Not an excuse to wear your sweaty world-worn socks in my bed. And moreover, and this is where I might lose some of you because I don't have any evidence, however, I think there's a correlation between those who wear socks in bed and those who are breastfed for too long. The world talking situation. And I'm not mommy shaming. Bread's famous for as long as you want. I am saying your child may grow up to wear socks in bed and may also be Ted Bundy. Thank you.
Oh, that's a banger of a hill. I would rather freeze my ass off than wear socks in bed. I think it's disgusting.
Agreed. I always thought people put new socks on, like bed socks. Like you should the ones that you wore all day.
I think
you
people
just leave
do
them
that.
On. That's disgusting. People who wear dirty socks in bed. I didn't know those people existed. People who squirt the ketchup all over the fries. People who put the toilet paper on upside down. All of you, gotta go.
Gotta go.
I don't even like bed socks are gross. Period. Even if they're like fresh and clean and you're just
I
putting,
agree.
It's like.
Yeah.
Well, let me again be the dissenter.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. Where I grew up, it was very, very cold. And the house I grew up in was a very, like, drafty old farmhouse. And we heated it with a wood stove that was in the basement. And my room was at the opposite upstairs corner of the house as the stove. So I spent my childhood basically in a cave of blankets, like, when I went to sleep because it was so cold during the winter. Socks in bed were a part of like staying warm at night because it was like 40 degrees in my room.
Okay, have you shed yourself of this ridiculous habit?
Oh, I don't wear them anymore.
Okay,
that's fine.
Like
that's
a necessity.
Right.
Socks in bed is a necessity, yes.
Yeah. I was like Wee Willy Winky with like a nightcap and like mittens and stuff.
I think of socks in bed as also something you do like when you are sick and when you have like when you're oscillating between like fever and you're not a normal human because your body temperature is so cold. That's fine too. So, but I don't want it when I'm healthy and feeling fine.
Yeah.
And then also err on the side. I don't like anything when I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. Nothing.
Also, I do believe it is scientifically proven that you've been breastfed for too long.
That is the funniest shit I've ever heard.
That is
so true.
Hilarious.
That took me by surprise.
That was a turn.
She was like, because I don't have any evidence. And I was like, what's coming up?
And it's like,
no evidence, no problem on his
area. Truly the spirit of the hills.
That was awesome.
So
that
good.
Was great. Okay, let's move on. I'm going to go first. First is, mine's a 4th of July related hill. I do like the 4th of July. I like it. I think it's a fun holiday. I have mixed feelings about America in general, but I like the 4th of July. But that being said, people who set off fireworks on nights that are not the actual 4th of July are dicks. Yeah. 4th of July is, and I'm saying this as somebody who now for the first time, I have a stepdog now. I'm marrying into having a dog. And being around a dog all the time, I'm more aware of like the needs of dogs and dog owners. And fireworks are very scary to dogs. And I think that it's fair for people who want to set off fireworks and dog owners to be prepared for this is the night that fireworks are going to be set off. If my dog is afraid, I'll get him a thunder shirt and put him in the basement, you know, whatever. But if there's like five nights kind of scattered around the 4th of July, it's really rude to people who have pets that get afraid of fireworks. It's really rude to people who are just trying to sleep.
Yeah.
It's just really rude to people who are maybe grew up in a part of the country where guns are around and you think you hear fireworks and you're still like, is it deer season? And, you know, it don't set off relatable. Don't set off fireworks on nights that are not the 4th of July.
I applaud that.
I
applaud that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. OK, yeah. let's go to Grace next.
This past weekend, Niall surprised me with a trip to Catalina Island, which was lovely and beautiful. We had a great time. But we're walking around at night, and there was this ghost tour. And the hill that I'm going to die on is that ghost tours are a scam. And it angers me because I like ghosts, and I want to go on a ghost tour that's really awesome. I need there to be a ghost tour that's not a scam. I want it real bad. I want it real, real bad because I love being spooked. I love it so much. And I walk around, and we're walking around, and it was basically this like sort of pseudo goth teen, like she was maybe 16, who was leading this ghost tour of all these tourists who looked like really excited, and they had their little pamphlets with like where the, you know, shaman had been beheaded or whatever near the island. And I was like, I know this is a scam, but I don't want it to be. So don't start a ghost tour unless you know that there are ghosts and unless you can show to me as a tourist who wants a ghost tour. Because I'm not taking it anymore.
What would be a non-scamming ghost tour to you?
Have you
been on one ever?
No, I haven't, but I need to see.
Well, Grace, if you'd stuck around until the end of that tour, you would have like, the girl would have been like, I'll be right back. And then you would just wait there for a really long time. And then a man walks out and you're like, hey, did you see the girl? And he's like, girl, there's not been a girl here for 40 years. And
dun,
she
dun, dun.
Was the ghost.
She was the ghost.
That's a good idea.
Honestly, that's a really great, mm-hmm. I would love that.
Where the tour guide pretends
that's amazing. All right, great idea. And now I'm going to put out to our listeners, if there is an awesome ghost tour that I need to know in any city, anywhere in the world, let me know, because I am a sucker for that shit. I love it. I love it.
Grace will like levitate and float to the ghost tour. Okay, let's hear from Tian.
Okay, I've already said it, and we've talked about it today, but, you know, it comes once every 4 years. Mm-hmm. I need everyone to watch the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team.
Yes!
This Sunday, 8 a.m. is the championship game. This team is amazing. They have been role models, and they also just, like, openly dislike this administration, which I think is so great to use their platform for. So everyone, please, if you're into sports, and if you're not into sports, watch the Women's World Cup this Sunday.
It's just so fun to watch. Yeah.
And they're so good. They're at the top of their sport. Mm-hmm. And they are fun to look at, too. I'm not going to.
They
are stunning. Yes.
There's also another thing that's really exciting about it, and you and I have talked about this, Tian, is that, like, women's soccer around the world is getting really good.
Yeah, that's so exciting.
It's really fun to see, like, all these really good teams. Like, the U.S. is not the only team in the game. There's like a bunch of teams that are great. Are we going to play Sweden or the Netherlands?
We're going to find out today.
Okay.
And is Megan coming back or is she still injured?
I think Megan is coming back.
Okay,
she
great.
Had a little bit of a hamstring injury, but she's day-to-day and feeling good.
Good.
My favorite thing about this Women's World Cup, too, is like I found a trend of like dudes discovering women's sports. Uh-huh. I will have like straight dude friends who I haven't talked to in years being like, this is fun. I'm like, yeah, where the fuck have you been? Of course this is fun.
Yeah.
These are just like humans being the best at their physical sport.
Yeah. It's great. Hard agree. I'll die on that hill with you.
Thank you.
All right, Brooke, bring us home.
Okay, listen. I like dogs. Love them. Love dogs. If you disagree with me on this, I don't care. Okay.
Okay.
It should be a crime. Listen.
Oh, God.
At work, we have a kitchen that is stocked with food, bowls, plates, cups, mugs. It's great. If I don't eat breakfast at home, some days I go to work and I'll have oatmeal. One day, I walk into work. This just happened. This is a big deal. It's like really, it's hard on my heart. Okay? I walk into work and one of my good friends at work, he has a dog named Carl. I love Carl. So I bend down. I'm excited to see Carl. I bend down and I go, wait, just Carl is drinking water out of the bowl I ate oatmeal out of the day before. And then it becomes this giant conversation.
Oh, my God.
Where the people who bring their dogs, and then I just see it everywhere. I see a glass, a mason jar that I've drank water out of. Somebody's dog is licking out of it, head in the jar, licking water out of it. And then, like, every other non-white person is like, yeah, this happens. My friend Sophie, and all the white people at work are like, what, you monster? If it's good enough for me, it's good enough for them. No, I don't care. It is not okay, okay? And my friend Sophie... She is Taiwanese, and she was like, yeah, that. Why do you think I give all the mugs an extra wash before I use them? They all do that. And it's like, oh, but dishwashers work. I don't care. First of all, if you want to share an ice cream cone with your dog, that is on you. I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear about it. That's on you. That's your business. If you want to be the type of criminal who shares a plate with your dog at your home, that's fine. But at work, I feel like it's disrespectful. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's gross. It's community property. Mm-hmm. And I don't let dogs lick me in the face. I don't care. Forget your dishwasher, because you know what? Dogs actually eat poop. Okay, I don't care how sweet your dog is, how beautiful, how what scientists told you that their mouths are cleaner. They eat poop. Okay. No dishwasher is that powerful. And if somebody put your toilet bowl in the dishwasher, you wouldn't eat out of it. Okay. Your dog's mouth is a toilet bowl. It's not
I
okay.
Love it. Oh,
wow.
Okay.
I love this.
Dog dishes for dogs.
Yes.
Human dishes for humans.
Yes.
I 100%. Yes. Yes.
Dying on that hill with you.
I lost a poll on Twitter on this.
Really?
Yes.
Who are these monsters on your Twitter?
Monsters.
Okay, guys, look, I am the only white person at the table. Oh, and God. I am going to say that I would never use community property for a dog. But I have, like, really loosened up my like, policy on, like, face licking for the dog. Because he just, like, won't
it's
take
cultural.
No for an
answer.
It's
face
cultural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't know if face licking is he fine. Just, I like so me. Right.
I like touching nose to nose, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cute. I like hugging dogs.
Sure.
Yeah. But, like, I don't think our tongue should touch.
Okay. I have a question.
I am sorry.
Brooke, I have a question. How do you feel about sleeping with dogs in the bed? Not on top, in the bed, in the sheets.
Totally respect that some people think that's gross because dogs, their feet are gross. It's like putting your shoes under the covers.
Yeah.
But I loved my dog so much that I would let her get in the bed under the covers. And I thought it looked really cute when she was under the covers.
Yeah.
So I'm not perfect.
What are you talking about?
Sharing ice cream cones.
Exactly.
We weren't sharing bowls.
The dog like sleeps physically on me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't bother me.
Like I have a very like, I give off a lot of body heat. It's like very freakish. I give off a lot of body heat and the dog is just like a heat miser. He's like, yeah. And he wants to sleep on me. My cat climbs under, when the cat and the dog don't live together. The cat and the dog live separately. But my cat loves to climb under the covers and sleep next to me. For some reason, it's not as weird to have a cat do it as it is to have a dog do it.
Yeah.
She doesn't go outside.
And she's, you know, she's not like eating the ass of other dogs.
No, but she does spend a lot of time cleaning her own ass with her mouth.
That's true. Right. But I know where that butthole's been. And I and I see it every day. It doesn't bother me as much.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, dog plates, please, everybody, dog plates.
Poop, dog plates, buttholes. What a good place to end this conversation.
Magic.
Brooke, thank you so much for dropping by. This was great. Grace and Tien, thank you for coming by today. And thanks to Alyssa Master Monaco for calling in. There will be more Hysteria next week. Hysteria is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Rustin is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Nadina Melkonian and Elijah Cohn, for production support each week. Get your gun. Get your gun.